Hey, this is Derek Hashem, number 20 for real. Last week I said it was number 20, but it was actually number 19. This is the actual number 20 class, and some about Pesach also. We're starting in section 2, chapter 3, individual providence, and then we'll do some of the Derek Hashem on Pesach as well. So the first paragraph in chapter 3 is very long, so we're going to look at that outside. Basically what he's talking about, I'll read the first sentence. We've already discussed the fact that man's task is to exist and choose good in a world containing both good and evil. So he discusses here at length how the world is filled with good and evil, including all character traits, which are on a spectrum. One side is on the good side and the other side is on the evil side. For instance, mercy on one side and callousness on the other, or being happy and satisfied with what one has, or the opposite, he just says, on the other. And the same is true of all other traits. And that the highest wisdom considered every possible quality that could be included within the world and created people who have different balances of those qualities and different attributes and different possessions. So this coincides very nicely with an article in Strive for Truth by Rav Dessler, which I tried to look for quickly before this class and didn't find it. I hope I'll bring you the source. But Rav Dessler discusses at length being created uniquely and individually and how that's a special chesed. So this whole long paragraph is really talking about how it's really three-page long. It's not a paragraph, obviously, but three-page long section, which discusses the gifts and the challenges that each one has according to their character traits. So it's interesting what Soloveitchik points out, that being created in the image of God means part of the image of God is that God is unique. There's nothing else like Hashem. And so if we're created in Hashem's image, one of the qualities that we have that's like Hashem is absolute uniqueness.
Oh, nice.
Right? Isn't that nice? So there can be no other human being exactly like you. Not possible. And that's because we're created in the image of Hashem. So that if we are created in that image, which we are, that the corollary of us being absolutely unique, like Hashem is absolutely unique, is that we should live our uniqueness. So we should seek that uniqueness, what makes us absolutely unique, and then learn to live in that space, because Hashem created us that way for a reason. We have something specific to contribute to the world through our unique essence, our unique combination of everything. So that contravenes a little bit of the gestalt of today in the right-wing world, on the one hand. And on the other hand, I heard an interesting explanation of why our men in general wear black and white. Even though anybody who knows about black and white can really differentiate between a black suit and a white shirt, meaning there's all kinds of white shirts and there's all kinds of black suits, so you could still be unique in that. I remember one of our teachers here in Denver, he was so cute, a budding rabbi on the younger side. He gave a Pirkei Avos shiur to the women, and he blushed as he told us something that he was absolutely embarrassed about from his childhood. That, you know, and I'm thinking, like, what was he so embarrassed about? He prefaced it that he's so embarrassed, and he's blushing. And he said, you know, when I was in middle school, you know, as a kid growing up, I got hand-me-down clothes from my cousins. And they were in very good shape. Our cousins had a comfortable lifestyle, and they would send us the clothes after the other boys grew out of them. So when I was in eighth grade, I saved a special shirt for my first day of ninth grade. It was a designer shirt. He said, I'm so embarrassed to tell you that now, that I saved a designer shirt, you know, for the first day of ninth grade. I'm thinking, that's your big embarrassment? Oh, my gosh. You're from such a high level that your huge embarrassing event in your life is that you saved a designer shirt for the first day of ninth grade. Anyway, the point is that even though there can be many differences in white shirts and many differences in black suits, one reason why the men wear black and white is to emphasize that the difference is inside, not outside. That has to do with who's wearing the suit, not what the suit looks like, that makes the difference. So there is a concept of that. that should be the innerness that makes a difference. So so Rav Dessler discusses that each one of us is created totally uniquely, and that that's a special chesed that Hashem does for us. Not only that he creates us completely uniquely, but that he lets us know that we've been created completely uniquely. So how is it a chesed? The chesed is that none of us can possibly, effectively, compete against another, because nobody can accomplish another's task. So there would be no point for me to desire to be somebody else, even though I might desire it, so I'm saying effectively, even though I might desire it, there's no point in it because I never can be that person. The convergence of parenting style that I experienced, and century that I was born in, and country that I was born in, and the amount of siblings, and the temperament of the siblings, and the socioeconomic status, and the learning abilities and disabilities, and the allergies and lack thereof, and the childhood illnesses and lack thereof, all of that converge uniquely in me, uniquely in each one of us, to make us who we are, and then present each one of us with our own ability to actualize ourselves in this world, so that nobody can be anybody else. So if our job is to connect to Hashem, and that is the job of every single human being, then if we were all created the same, or even similarly, if we're all created the same, then, and Hashem would say, okay, ready, set, connect, somebody who is created the same as me could connect better than me. It would be possible for them to achieve more than me if they put in extra effort or whatever it is. They could do better, and then I could be dejected that they did better than me. So, but if I truly understand that we're all 100% unique, it's not possible for anybody to ever achieve what only I can achieve. So that's a chesed that Rav Dessler explains that Hashem did for us by creating us completely unique, allowing us each to achieve a unique note in the symphony, so that there it's no possibility of somebody outshining us. Not possible. So it's the chesed that we're created that way, and also a chesed that Hashem lets us know that. So that in a way, and of course it doesn't work until you really internalize it, but in a way we can relax and not compete against other people. Although there is a competition, I see I have a student in a different class who is no longer my student. She's definitely catching up and surpassing. But I tutored her for a while, and we now share a teacher. And I definitely see the principle of kinas sofrim tarbe chachma, the one permitted jealousy that's available to us, that we're allowed to be jealous of, is we're allowed to be jealous of the sages. That's kinat sofrim, the jealousy of our sages. Tarbe chachma will increase wisdom. So it's an interesting thing that we're permitted to be jealous of that, because the reason or a reason we're not permitted to be jealous is because it might cause us to steal. So if we're jealous of somebody else's possession, we might try to figure out a way to get that possession for ourselves. But knowledge is not something that you can steal from another, but it is something that's available to every person that can be acquired through effort on your own. So that jealousy is permitted. You're allowed to be jealous of the sages because that increases wisdom. So I see that in this student. She should be the picture in the dictionary for that phrase where it says, Kinat Sofrim Tarbe Chachma, because she's a Baal Tshuva, a physician, but she's tired of being a Baal Tshuva. She doesn't want to be a Baal Tshuva anymore, and she learns and learns and learns and learns and learns and learns and learns. And she's got tutors all around the world, and she's learning the Gur Arye, and she compares the Maharal with the, I don't even know all the people that you can compare different philosophies with. And she's busy acquiring. And you can definitely see that she's driven by that, in a way, jealousy of people who are super knowledgeable. In order to acquire the knowledge that they have, she wants to be on their level, and she's not going to stop until she gets there. She's not going to stop. But she's definitely powering ahead. So while each person certainly is born into their birth circumstances, so our environments are unique. Nobody has our same environment. Even a sibling doesn't have the same. I even thought about that when I had my twins, because each child experiences their mother at a different stage of development, except for twins experience their mother at the same stage of development. But it's still not the same mother for each child because you have a different sense towards each child and you treat each child differently.
Mm-hmm.
So even the mothering, even of twins, is not the same. So each person has their environmental differences, details, and each person has their internal differences and details, which all add up to the unique person. So that's what Rav Dessler explains, and that's how Rav Soloveitchik discusses it, that we're all created in the image of God, absolutely unique. And the way the Ramchal talks about it then, he continues on to say that we're completely unique, and then this allows us to each have our own challenges and responsibilities in the world, that we do actualize ourselves in a unique way, but that we all have the exact way that we're, the things that we're prone to stumble upon and the things that we're extra strong with and the things that we're in between, and that each one of us has our own role to play. So he says, let's see, this situation can be compared to a government where the king's many servants must obey his orders. All of them together must fulfill the task of running his government, and the king therefore gives each one a particular assignment so that in between them all, everything necessary is accomplished. Each of these servants then has the obligation to complete his particular assignment. He is then rewarded by the king according to how he functions in his particular area of responsibility. The manner in which this is accomplished with regard to the entire human race is beyond our intellect's ability to grasp, and we can never understand it fully. The highest wisdom, however, determines and arranges these things in the best possible manner. Okay, so that's the first paragraph here. And he will go on. The whole next section is about Israel and the nations and how we as Jews are separate and different from the other nations, which we'll discuss in the Pesach part of the discussion here. But let's just I want to do paragraph 2 and 3 because they kind of make a section in this chapter, and then we'll leave 4 for the next time. All right, so paragraph 2. As discussed earlier, everything in the physical world is derived and transmitted from one concept to another, level by level, from its essence on the spiritual plane to the physical universe. The details of each individual's challenge also have their primary roots in the spiritual world. For by virtue of spiritual forces, each individual is given a different blend of elements of perfection and deficiency, as discussed earlier. How it comes about that particular challenges are meted out to particular individuals depends on the spiritual roots of each person. This distribution of challenges takes into account the true nature of all parties and circumstances and is decided by the highest wisdom whose decrees are most fitting and proper. According to the principles that we discussed earlier, all this should be clear. So it all should be clear. Today I was called by my son-in-law. The one who's in the wheelchair wanted to mm-hmm. come over so that I could upload some of his shiurim on my computer to the website that I'm helping him with. So I said, "Do you want to come over now?" He said, "That'd be great. I just have to get myself out of a little fix, and then I can come over." So I said, "Would you like some help with that fix?" I didn't know what it was. He said, "I already called a few people, and hopefully I'll be there soon." So then about 5 minutes later, he calls me back. He says, "Ima, nobody is able to call me back, so do you mind coming over for a few minutes?" Fine. So I drive over there. I still don't know what it is. I get there, and there's a key on the front door. I know the code. I open up the box. I let myself in. I call his name. He's in the bedroom. He tried to get himself out of bed, but wasn't able to. His feet fell off the... he's able to like hoist himself from the bed to the wheelchair if everything's aligned just right.
Uh-huh.
Everything was aligned just right. He got his feet onto the seat guards, and he was about to move his tush over into the seat of the chair, which takes some effort, and his yarmulke slipped off. And he went to grab it, which made everything go completely wrong. So he was half in the bed and half off the bed, and he couldn't really move except to use his phone. So I understood when I got there why he didn't really want me to come in the first place, because, you know, he was in a little compromised position. And I'm sure he would have rather had a male help him with that. But so I helped him, and, you know, just It's interesting, you know, how we're very careful in Shmirat Nagia, like any other mother-in-law and son-in-law would be, except for he's a quadriplegic, so sometimes you have to really help and touch places where you would never touch somebody else, you know. So I helped him and got him in a chair and got him all settled, and I asked him, I said, do you sometimes feel like you just want to scream? He said, oh, I did that already. So, you know, he got recombobulated, and I was just, and then he used his power chair to get to my house, and I drove home. It's only a block away. And I was just thinking, you know, it's so hard to be a quadriplegic. You're trying so hard to make your body work, and just doesn't serve you the way you'd like it to, and you're stuck. You're just trapped. You know, what is it about those challenges? If somehow it's related to his spiritual root. Right? Somehow Hashem created him first fully capable until 22 years old, and then an accident that took away the majority of those capabilities. Yeah. And, you know, what is it like to experience both, to cross that divide and still be willing to live in it and work on it? And it all has to do with this, the spiritual root of his soul and what he's meant to bring into the world. And the Kiddush Hashem that he's meant to bring in, whether it's through speaking, through meeting him. And also, I don't remember if I mentioned it in this class, I read something so nice in a book by Rabbi Gavriel Goldfeder from Boulder. Did I mention about the wells and how all our avos met their wives at wells?
No.
So it's such a nice concept to think about. So he wrote a book on relationships called The Genesis of Relationships, and each chapter is a parsha in Sefer Bereishit. So he talks about the men meeting their wives at wells. So what is a well? A well in Hebrew is be'er. Bet aleph resh, be'er. But that word, bet aleph resh, that root is related to bi'ur also, or sometimes we mispronounce it in American, we call it bear. Bear tefillah class, a class that explicates the tefillah, that explains or adds understanding to. So it's the same root. So he says, what does that mean? Why would our avos meet their women at the well? Because the well does represent water and Torah and what she can do. And then he says that Rivka, particularly when she went to draw the water from the well for the camels for Eliezer, the water rose to meet her. So she had a special relationship with the water. So Rabbi Goldfeder explains that if water is like Torah and innerness, so then causing it to rise up is part of the relationship that a woman has with a man. Bringing out the inner essence, calling forth the Torah that's within a man is part of the role of his wife. To be the one who stands next to him and causes it to rise up and spill forth. So that there's that concept of bi'ur, of explanation or calling forth the deeper meanings of something that goes with the air, the well. So I think about that also in terms of chesed, that a person's role, especially somebody who needs to receive chesed, somebody who's sick or somebody who's physically compromised or whatever it is, just somebody in a challenging situation, they can feel very frustrated at what they have to receive. And yet, they are part of Hashem's plan of calling forth chesed from others. You know, to be the one whose role it is to have to sit in the wheelchair and require assistance or have to need a loan and require somebody give it to them or need a hug and have somebody, you know, require somebody to give it to them. I was thinking about that with the Lebanon War a few years ago when so many people had to leave the north. You know, we're constantly being challenged in Israel with our tenancy in the land. Are we allowed to live in the land or not? Mm-hmm. And we deserve to live in the land through Torah and mitzvot, but there's so many Jews who aren't keeping Torah and mitzvot, and there's so many Jews who are keeping Torah and mitzvot that aren't keeping properly. Also, whether they have an ayin hara for other Jews, or whether they don't dam the chafutz chud, or speaking lashon hara, whatever it is, But chesed is something that can tie us back to the land. So I think that it's possible that occasionally Hashem causes things to happen, like perhaps that Lebanon war, where so many people had to flee the north and so many people in the south opened up their homes to receive them and mm-hmm. opened up their pocketbooks to pay for them. And not just Jews in the south who opened their homes, but Jews in America, too, who had apartments in Israel who opened up their apartments to receive them, and also people who wrote checks to help with the displacement, that it caused, that war caused an outpouring of chesed, which then settled, I think, some of the accounts and allowed us to maintain a right to stay in the land. So I think that can be part of the spiritual root, you know, getting back to the Derech Hashem, part of the spiritual root of a person can be to bring forth certain aspects in others or in the nation or in the world as part of their life's work. And it could be a temporary thing, could be a long-term thing, but anyway, everybody has a spiritual root. And the spiritual root is then manifest through the different channels, through the kochot and through the malachim, the different forces and angelic energy pathways. It's then manifested in the physical so that one's spiritual root can be accessed and can, so the energy can flow forward from that spiritual root into the world, and so that the physical that that person occupies can be the means to grow that spiritual root, to nourish that spiritual root.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's paragraph two. Any questions on that so far?
Yeah.
Okay. Paragraph three, very short. According to this basic principle, all the gratifications and sufferings of this world exist as a challenge for man. The nature of each particular challenge is what the highest wisdom determines to be the best for each particular individual. Next time we're going to see additional aspects to that. But let's leave this at this, that everything good and everything bad is our personal and particular challenge, so that we can accomplish what Hashem wants us to accomplish. And I think about this sometimes when I say the bracha in the morning, Sha'asali Kol Tzarki, right? Blessed are you, Hashem, King of the Universe, who Sha'asali Kol Tzarki. So there's a few different ways to translate that. So the common way that it's translated, and I don't have the art scroll in front of me, I just have a Hebrew sitter, is that Hashem made for me all the things I need. Sha'asali made for me Kol Tzarki, all my needs.
Mm-hmm.
But you can translate that, really the proper translation just to make it parav is, who made for me all my needs. So one way to understand that would be, he made for me everything I need. But another way to understand that is, everything I need, I only need because Hashem made me need it. He made for me all my needs.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So that we can understand that in this bracha, that Hashem causes, the only reason why I need something is because Hashem caused me to need it. And so that can be a place of feeling the acceptance of the fact that we have needs and not all the needs are met, or we don't feel them all being met, because actually having that need is meeting a need. Right? If we're supposed to be on a particular journey with particular challenges and brachas in this world, so every need that we have actually is meeting that overall meta need of us being provided with the circumstances to best work on ourselves.
Uh-huh.
So that's Sha'asali Kol Tzarki. Just in those brachas, the next one is Hamechin Mitzadei Gaver, who prepares the steps of the person or the righteous, it could be. That once Hashem made for us all of our needs, Hashem then prepares the pathways for us to work with them. And then the next bracha is Ozer Yisrael Bigvurah, so Hashem girds us with strength, so we have then the strength to meet the challenges that those needs provide us. And then once we've met them, Oter Yisrael Betifarah, that Hashem crowns us with glory. And then the next bracha is a strange bracha if we're going in order, Hanotein Leyayef Koach, right? He, thank you, Hashem, for giving to the Yayef Koach. So Yayef is different than Ayef. Ayef, al Ayin, you would say, means tired or weary. Whereas Yayef, same letters but just inverted, Yud Ayin Fe, Yayef means weary, but emotionally weary, despairing, actually. It means that inner sense of, I can't go on any further. It's not the tiredness of the morning, because these brachos are in the order of the morning, getting up and getting dressed and putting our shoes on, etc. But so this one really wouldn't belong here. If it was about being tired, it should be first. Right?
Yeah.
But it's here. Thank you, Hashem, for giving the emotionally weary strength to carry on. So if you want to go through these blessings and thinking about our needs, and that Hashem makes us need what we need, and then he prepares the pathways for us to walk with those needs and gives us the strength to handle those needs and crowns us with glory when we accomplish those needs or we meet those needs, but still carrying that crown, walking around with all that tiferet on our heads that, yes, I'm bearing my challenges, just thinking, for instance, about Yoshua or somebody like that who's in a position like that, you might say, I had enough of this crown. I really want to be, you know, bearing these needs and meeting them so often, you know, whether it's the stresses of poverty or the stresses of living in a cramped apartment in Yerushalayim or whatever it is, it could feel so heavy sometimes that we do need that extra hanotein li'ayif koach. Please, Hashem, thank you, Hashem, for giving strength to the weary, to the despairing. Help me keep going. So those are those brachos. The next one is an interesting one, too, but we can discuss that at a different time. Okay, so now I want to flip to the back of the book, if you have it, and look at what the Ramchal says about Pesach. Okay, so this is in section 4, chapter 8. He just has a short part on the seasonal commandments. So I'm going to read that, and we'll discuss it again in Mirtz Hashem when we get there in a long time. But for Pesach, I think we should look at it just to see what he has to say. The significance of matzah is related to the Exodus from Egypt. Until the Exodus, Israel was assimilated among other peoples, one nation in the midst of another. With the Exodus, they were redeemed and separated. Until that time, every aspect of the human being was darkened by the spiritual opaqueness and pollution that overcame it. With the Exodus, the Jews were set aside so they would have the opportunity to purify their bodies and prepare themselves for the Torah and for dedication to God. In order for this to be possible, they were commanded to rid themselves of leaven and eat matzah. So let's stop there for a minute. There's a few important things here. So going backwards, so the preparation for purifying our bodies to receive the Torah, and it's interesting that here there's a physical preparation for receiving a spiritual guidebook. The preparation is twofold. It's a sur mira va'aseh tov preparation. Sur mira, leave behind the negative, right? So don't eat leaven. And aseh tov, do something positive, eat matzah. So it seems like it's the same mitzvah, don't eat that and do eat that. But in fact, it's two separate things. Don't eat what's inappropriate for this stage of development, and do eat this. This makes a difference, that you actually do positively consume this. So, of course, there's lots of secrets in matzah and chametz and what it is. And, you know, the difference between how they're spelled is just one little tiny drop of a leg in between the chet and the hay. They're spelled with the same letters, chametz and matzah. But that tiny little space that's in the hay is filled in the chametz, and we learn from that that's just a tiny little bit of time that makes a difference between matzah and chametz. But we also have the concept of zrizus, of alacrity, that's shown in that time lapse, that we want to do things quickly, that things can be done quickly and should be. They shouldn't be put off until tomorrow. I don't know if you ever had the privilege of listening to the marvelous Midos Machine, but there is a song that we still sing today, even with the youngest in our house being 18, when somebody starts to go a little bit slowly. So, and everybody can sing along. It says, Zerizim, Makdim, Min, Lamitzavos. All good deeds should be done right away. The Torah says you shouldn't shirk. Roll up your sleeves and get to work. Don't put off till tomorrow something you can do today. So the concept of Zerizis is actually a very deep concept because as things get done quickly, something that's very tiny is something that Tuma can't attach itself to. So tiny time and tiny physical objects are things that are outside the sphere of Tuma. So we have a halachic principle that things smaller than a barley kernel can't be tame, and things that take no time, things that don't stretch out in time, can't be tame. Now, if we understand that tuma is entering into, you know, is connected through decay, entering into the decay zone, so it makes total sense when we have this concept of mitzvah haba liyadcha al tachmitzena, a mitzvah that comes into your hand, don't let it become chametz. So that's the delay. Don't let it delay. Once you let it delay, the opportunity for it starts to decay. The way in which one can accomplish the mitzvah in a good way starts to decay, and things become dissipated and lost over time. So you want to do things quickly. But really, what I want to point out is further up in the paragraph is the redeemed and separated concept. So until the Exodus, Israel was assimilated among the other peoples, one nation in the midst of another. But with the Exodus, they were redeemed and separated. So really, part of the concept of the Exodus altogether is the separation of the Jewish people from the rest of the nations, which I want to talk about a little bit longer. Let's just see, which I'll say in just a few minutes. Let's just finish reading this section, and then I want to talk about how we were separated. Okay, so bread, which is designated as man's primary food, is appropriate to the state that God desired for man in this world. Leaven is a natural element of bread, making it more digestible and flavorous, thus adding an element of pleasure and desire to the primary purpose of nourishment. This element feeds the Yetzer Hara, which is a necessary component of man in this world. At a particular determined time, however, Israel was required to abstain from leaven and be nourished by matzah, which is unleavened bread. This reduced the strength of each individual's evil urge and inclination toward the physical, thus enhancing his closeness to the spiritual. It would be impossible, however, for man to constantly nourish himself in this manner, since this is not the state desired for him in this world. This practice is therefore observed only on certain designated days, when he must be on an appropriately higher level. This is the main concept of Pesach as the festival of matzos. The other rituals of the Seder night are also all details paralleling various particular aspects of the redemption from Egypt. And that's all he writes in this whole book, all about Pesach, that's it. But let's just talk about how the Jewish people were separated, because really the exodus from Egypt is the principal separating factor of the Jewish people from the rest of the world. Which I think we will see as we go further in the next section, but I just want to give an overview here. So if we all came from Adam and Chava, all human beings came from Adam and Chava, we have to ask, how did the Jewish people become different? Now, we have the same root and the same shorish neshama as everybody else on the planet, and we Jews also are affected by that initial sin that Adam and Chava participated in. When we take challah, we have in mind, or some people have in mind, to be metaken the fact, correct the fact, that chava, that's an interesting phrase, chava kilkila et chalato shel ha'olam, that chava messed up the challah of the world, that Adam was considered like the challah, and like if you imagine the whole world was created and finished, and then Hashem pulled out a little chunk of it, like we pull out challah from a dough, pulled out some of the dirt of the world, and from that made Adam. So Adam was like the challah of the world, not just in that he was pulled from the earth, but also in that Adam is the rachis of the world. The whole purpose of the world was for Adam. And the whole purpose of the dough is for the challah. The whole purpose of all sustenance is to connect the spiritual and the physical. And that's what the Kohen does. The Kohen's job is to connect the spiritual and the physical, connect the Jews with Hashem. So whenever we create physical sustenance represented by bread, we separate off the challah to give to the Kohen so that we thereby state the whole purpose of physical sustenance is to connect the spiritual and physical. So the rachis, the first part of this dough, the essence of this dough is going to go to nourish the Kohen so that the Jewish people can be connected to Hashem. So that's what Adam was as the challah of the world. The raison d'etre of the whole planet is human beings. And Chava kilkila, she mixed up cursed. It's not the same word as cursed from Klala, but she messed up, let's just say, the challah of the world. So we can fix that. So that means that we Jews today are still connected to Chava. So we still carry part of that soul, which is the root soul of all humanity. How then did we become a different people? Technically, even spiritually, a different species, right? So we have this hierarchy of all things that exist in the world, domain, inanimate objects, so water, rocks, etc., and then someach, plants, and then chai, animals, and then medaber, people, and then Yisrael, Jews. So it goes step by step, higher and higher. We Jews are technically, spiritually, a different level altogether, not connected. We are connected, and we're not connected to the rest of humanity. So how did that happen? So the process began when Abraham noticed Hashem in the way that he did and created a relationship. So then Hashem said, I'm going to... create, he made the bris with Abraham, excuse me, the covenant between the parts, the bris b'nai b'tarim, I forgot how you pronounce that with tesaf or the tuf, I have to look at how it's spelled. Anyway, that bris between the parts, when Hashem cut the animals in half and went through with a pillar of fire and put Abraham into a deep sleep, that bris was made in response to Abraham's question. Right, so Hashem says, basically paraphrasing, Abraham, I'm so thankful finally you recognize me. Through you, the entire planet and all humanity is going to be transformed. You and your children are going to be a special people. And just a minute, please. Somebody's calling me urgently. I'm teaching right now.
We're taking your keys, okay?
Okay. Sorry, was not an emergency. Let's see. Get my thoughts back together. Okay. So Abraham says, great, I appreciate that. That you're going to change the whole world through me. Excuse me, and my descendants. But he says, B'me'eda, how will I know? So it's a very strange question. How do you, you're talking to Hashem, how do you say, how will I know? Right? So really, and then the answer is a strange answer, where Hashem puts Abraham to sleep and says, your children will be strangers in a strange land. They'll be oppressed and afflicted, and then they'll come out with rehush gadol, with a lot of stuff. What kind of answer is that? What kind of question is that, and what kind of answer is that? So really what Abraham is saying is, I understand why I earned this. I don't understand how my children are going to earn this. How will my children earn all my descendants? How will they earn this special relationship with you? So then Hashem's answer is, don't worry, I'm going to custom design a workshop for them in which they will have the opportunity to earn what you have earned, that they will become separate from the rest of the peoples of the world. They'll become the Hebrews, like you are, Ivri. They'll become Bnei Yisrael, the children of Israel, through this workshop that I'm arranging for them. And the workshop is called Mitzrayim. But it's really a two-pronged workshop. It's Mitzrayim and Har Sinai. So there's a double thing that has to happen. First, Sur Mira. First, we have to take away the bad. So that's Mitzrayim. Mitzrayim is Tsar, the root is Tsar, and it was sort of like, have you ever seen those old washing machines with the hand crank rollers to wring things out?
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's sort of, that's what happened, is Hashem put us through the ringer, put us through, squeezed us so tight that the regular humanity of us was squeezed out. The dross from us was squeezed out. and then squeezed that tight like a sponge, squeezed tight with no water in it. We were then brought to the foot of Har Sinai and given the Torah, where we were able to, in that squeezed tight state, release and receive into all those pores, receive the Torah into us, so that we actually were transformed by that process into the different state that we exist in today as Jews. And the Ramchal discusses even further on how a ger goes through a similar process in detaching themselves from the tree of their family, of their nation, the branch of their family, the tree of their nation and the branch of their family. The ger detaches themselves and then grafts themselves on to the nation of Israel. And through that detachment and grafting, that sur mira, the ase tov, right, the leaving behind whatever the negative is, even if a person comes from a positive family, but leaving behind the negativity of their previous culture and religion, and then choosing to join up with the Jewish people, grafting them on, it's through that process that they earn the title of Ben Avraham or Bat Sarah, that they actually become the children of the first two who did that process, left behind their old ways and chose to cling to Hashem. So they earned that title. But it's through that process that the Jewish people as a group actually became transformed from regular human beings into Jews. So it's really the concept of Yetziat Mitzrayim, which goes together with Mahamad Har Sinai, standing at the foot of Har Sinai, is a double birth process similar to an egg, a chick, right? So the egg comes out of the chicken. It's hatched. It comes out. It's laid. First, the egg is laid. So the egg comes out of the chicken, but you don't have a chick yet. You just have an egg. But still, that was a birth process of the chicken laying the egg. But now the egg has to incubate for however long it does, and then it hatches and the chick comes out. So a chick is really born twice, and so were the Jewish people, first taken out of Mitzrayim, but not yet ready for their mission, not yet a ready nation, but taken out as a group all at once, one nation from the midst of another, and then we had to incubate 49 days in the desert, incubate and get ready to be born at Har Sinai, born meaning being given our mission so that we're ready to move forward into the world with who we are as a transformed people. So that's one reason why we have a custom to eat eggs at the Seder. Before the Suda, there is a custom. It also relates to the Korban Chagiga, to the to the holiday sacrifice. And it also relates to this concept of the double birth. So one reason why Pesach is such an important time is because it is that birth of the Jewish people, the coming out of all humanity and the transformation of a subset of regular humanity into a transformed people with a special mission, a special connection to Hashem, and a special role among all the nations. So, yeah, that's the Ramchal in a nutshell on Pesach, and on, we'll see that more in depth when we get to the next chapter on Israel and the nations. But it's just something to consider, that we have that energy that we can access during Pesach, the energy of transformation of self, of detaching ourselves from the world around us and reattaching ourselves to Hashem, specifically as his vehicles in the world for accomplishing his will among the nations.
Mm-hmm.
Any questions on that so far?
No.
Now, the question is, should we end here for now, which might be the right time, or should I tackle a question that I got by email, which doesn't really have to do with these subjects right now?
Does it have to do with Pesach?
Not really. Maybe we should just leave it like this, and we'll tackle that question a different time.
Okay.
Yeah, I think so. Good. Okay, then. So you should have a Chag Kasher V'Sameach, And yeah, lots of wonderful things happening. And I'll look forward to seeing whoever's coming to Denver and in Denver. And everybody else should have a wonderful, uplifting, transformative, Emunah-inspiring Yantif, where this hopefully should be our last Pesach. Maybe it won't even be Pesach. Maybe it will be the Gula before Pesach, and we'll all get to meet in Yerushalayim and offer the Korbanot together.
Zad Hashem.
Okay. Chakashem v'sameach. And we'll talk. Okay, so we're not going to have a class next week or during Pesach. So that makes our next class. Let's just see. Where are we? April 16th. Class will be April 16th. Okay, great. Have a chakashem v'sameach.
Thank you very much.
Talk to you later. Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.